Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 36, recorded Wednesday, April 5th, 2006. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Three topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: the happiest flight, death by a thousand nicks, and the long and short of it. So this week, coming to you from the Orlando, Florida downtown Marriott, not a bad hotel, but the location is a bit disappointing. Rather than being in the midst of things, seems to be sort of tucked off to the side of downtown, sort of on the northern shoulder of downtown, in the shadow of I-4. I'm here for a conference that's being held at the Disney Contemporary Resort, but decided against staying there. As we've discussed in earlier episodes, trying to do business in a leisure resort hotel is, I don't know, it's just a recipe for frustration. And I found this true in my past stays at Disney hotels. You know, if you're there with a family, it's a great experience. Disney does family hospitality better than anyone. However, you know, this focus on the family experience inevitably means that the business traveler and his or her needs come in second. And not that that's bad. I think you've got to focus. You've got to make a choice. You've got to focus if you're going to be great at something. And I think Disney's decision is the right one. And I've had some great times with my family at Disney World, at their Wilderness Resort and the Yacht and Beach Club and even the Budget All-Stars Resort. However, business stays at places like the Swan and the Dolphin have been less than wonderful. Not that they were bad, but they were adequate, and you could just feel that the business traveler just wasn't the focus of their efforts. Well, anyhow, it's jammed down here in Orlando. We're in the midst of the high season down here, spring break giving over to Easter week. Hotels were tight. I needed my Marriott Platinum Override to get this room, and the Hertz guys were passing out car keys as fast as they came in, and my United TED flight was over $600. Now, I know that TED flights are supposed to be low-cost budget flights, but, you know, you would think that with a $600 seat, Ted could find it in his heart somehow to comp me one of those $5 boxed meals. Following up, in our last episode, Leo Vigoda related what he called a horrible experience at Frankfurt Airport. This prompted another listener, David Chapman, to write in with his perspective. David says, I was reminded of a recent better experience whilst returning from Christchurch, New Zealand to Manchester, UK via Singapore and London Heathrow. Now, I can hear some of your listeners say, a good experience through Heathrow? Impossible. But for my wife and I, it was almost a joy to fly halfway around the world in 36 hours. We checked in for Singapore Airlines online for a 2 p.m. flight from Christchurch, South Island to Singapore, a 10.5-hour flight on a 777-200. Our luggage was checked all the way through to Manchester. We arrived on time in Singapore at 7:20 local time and walked straight from the aircraft to the transit hotel for a 12-hour overnight stopover without passing through immigration or baggage reclaim customs. We had pre-booked the hotel room online and just showed our onward boarding cards and passports at hotel reception. Now, it's important to remember to pack all those little necessities for the hotel stay, but if you forget, there's really some great airport shopping just a few steps away from your room. After a good night's sleep, we walked back to the terminal gate for our 9 a.m. 14.5-hour flight to Heathrow. We arrived at Terminal 3 Heathrow on time at 3:15 local time, p.m. local time, cleared immigration, and headed for Terminal 1 with only our hand luggage. We decided to walk via the underpass for a bit of exercise. Now, I would say after a 14.5-hour flight, I'd be looking for a little exercise also. And caught our 5:50 p.m. domestic flight to Manchester. After the 40-minute flight, now think about this, 10.5-hour flight from New Zealand to Singapore, and then we got 14.5 hours to Heathrow, and now the last leg, a 40-minute jump. We arrived at domestic baggage claim Terminal 3. There were our cases on the carousel, ready and waiting, and just as importantly, intact. We passed through the exit door and back into the real world with no sign of any customs officers. Well, I'm not surprised by that, given that my guess is, as David said, you end up arriving at domestic baggage claims. So given that you came into the country in London, I would think that then once you're inside, you wouldn't expect to pass through immigration in Manchester. At least that's the way it is in the U.S. I mean, even if you're on a through flight, the first place you hit the ground in the U.S., you got to pass through immigration and customs, and then you get back on the plane again. So anyhow, David said he was assured by Singapore Airlines that all transiting passengers who arrive in this way are vetted before arrival. And he said, "I'm just glad to be home without any body searches." I think that's a good objective. Well, hey, then on the website, another listener from Canada this time offered a perspective on my TSA shoe carnival comments from the last episode, reminding us that some of the things we take for granted aren't givens everywhere. So he starts, or she starts, I don't know, it was an anonymous posting. "I hail from north of the border, and when I say north, I mean the real north, and not the north where Toronto, Edmonton, and Vancouver airports are dealt with, but further north, where there are no TSA Canadian equivalents, and in fact, no security whatsoever, at least for the three-hour flight it takes you to get to Yellowknife, where you're then forced to get off the plane and go through a more gentle screening process. I amuse myself with a comparison of our two processes and find myself shamed into perhaps being a little less frustrated on future travels. Your shoe wars have nothing on the gentle act of deplaning in 40 below, and that's 40 degrees below. I'm assuming, given that it's Canadian writing this, it's 40 below, and that's in Celsius, as opposed to Fahrenheit, which means it's really cold. So deplaning at 40 below degrees, I'm assuming Celsius, marching across the tarmac, pushing your carry-on luggage through a metal detector, or flipping open a laptop to have it wanded. Northern road warriors find themselves more concerned with the return flight and keeping the kids' goldfish alive, or worrying about how to explain 5 cans of Palm Hearts stuffed in your parka pockets, or the myriad of other products that are hauled back to tiny northern communities from big cities. And that act makes traveling light an unattainable dream. Well, listen, thanks to everyone who sends along their thoughts and stories. They're great. Thanks to David and the anonymous Canadian. The email address is comments, comments, at travelcommons.com, or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Why don't you just let it all go and come to Carolina? So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is the happiest flight. My afternoon United TED flight down to Orlando Monday afternoon was packed. And as near as I can tell, I was the only one not going to the Mouse Kingdom. And I think I was also in another minority, speaking with an American accent. Next to me in the window and center seat were a Japanese mother and daughter, and across the aisle were an English mother and her daughters. In front of me were her husband and son, sitting next to someone who sounded Scandinavian, and behind me were a family of Germans. It was one of the smoother TED boardings I've experienced in a while, and perhaps it was because all the international travelers had checked most of their luggage hours ago at the start of their journey, and London or Manchester or Frankfurt or Tokyo or Stockholm, or because maybe they were still a bit cowed from their experience with the gentle souls in U.S. customs and immigration. But you know, I think that the main reason, or the key reason, was that almost everybody was happy. Almost every passenger walking onto the plane had a smile on their face. People weren't grousing about the 30-minute delay, and families weren't bitter about being split across aisles. Everybody was excited. They were on the final leg of their journey to the happiest place on earth, and no amount of budget carrier parsimony was going to spoil their good mood. I mean, quite a bit different from the typical LaGuardia to O'Hare run, which is packed with business travelers in suits trudging off to work. And the good mood seemed to spill over to the flight attendants also, in spite of, or perhaps because of, the limited English of many of the passengers. When the drink cart rolled by, the Japanese mother in my aisle asked for an iced coffee. And the flight attendant, not quite sure she, you know, heard it right, asked her back, "Iced coffee?" Not one of the usual Coke Diet Coke water orders that she normally gets. But the Japanese woman nodded. And the flight attendant, still not sure, mimed putting ice into a coffee cup and then looked sort of quizzically at the Japanese woman. Japanese woman nodded. And the flight attendant then mimed pouring coffee into the cup with sort of that, you know, raised eyebrow look. And the woman, Japanese woman, nodded again, and so the flight attendant sort of shrugged and did what she had mimed. She scooped some ice into a coffee cup and poured coffee over it, and the Japanese woman took it and just happily drank it. The flight attendant seemed very relieved when I ordered a Diet Coke. You know, I spent time during the flight watching the children because I think they, more than anyone else, gave this flight its happy character. It was nothing overt that they did. There wasn't some giggling band of preteens or some youth group in the back singing the Mickey Mouse Club theme song. But for most of them, the journey was part of the excitement, part of the vacation. And unlike most frequent travelers who long ago lost the romance of travel, seeing it more as something that needed to be endured or needs to be endured to reach a destination, the journey for these kids was an integral part of the experience. The takeoff at O'Hare, the view out of the window, seeing the ocean out on the horizon, the touchdown at Orlando, even the little tram ride from the gates to the main terminal was all something to be taken in, wide-eyed, and remembered. You know, the look the two English girls across the aisle from me gave their mother as we were deplaning sort of snapped it in place for me. They had been looking out the window the whole flight, and now they looked at their mother, wide-eyed in anticipation, and said, "Can you believe it? We're here!" I'm going to try and remember that look, that tone, that emotion, the next time I get off the plane in New York. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, Death by a Thousand Nicks. Now, back in Travel Commons podcast number 31, we talked about a comment from Amy about hotel add-on charges. Amy had posted this on the Travel Commons website, and her comment was specific to room internet charges, but she really hit a nerve for many frequent travelers. It seems that rather than raising revenues through increasing room prices, hotels are trying to keep things under the radar, and they're keeping the room rates constant and then disaggregating the guest experience, charging for previously free services or adding on mandatory service charges. And I'll tell you, just recently, over the past few weeks, parking charges have gotten under my skin. You know, I can understand parking charges for in-city properties in New York or Chicago or San Francisco. Land is expensive in these sort of vertical cities. And you know, many guests don't use cars during their stays anyhow. They either cab in or take mass transit, as we discussed in Travel Commons podcast number 30. However, I'll tell you, I'm less forgiving about the parking charges during my most recent stays, $12 a night here in Orlando and $20 a night at the Laguna Cliffs Resort in Dana Point, California. You know, those prices for the right to park in an open lot or at best a two-level garage seem a bit over the top. You know, and these hotels, especially the Laguna Cliffs Resort, are the ones that most people are driving to. Parking in these hotels is not an optional service. It's an integral part of the stay. And some, like here at the Orlando Marriott, use the mandatory valet parking game to try and make it seem like you're getting something for your money. But that's just one more line to stand in when everybody's trying to get their car at 7:30 in the morning. PricewaterhouseCoopers confirmed our suspicions a few weeks ago when they released their 2005 wrap-up of the lodging industry. They forecast that the hotel industry will generate $1.6 billion in fees and surcharges in 2006. That's billion with a B. It's a billion with a lot of zeros. And that's a 7% increase over the $1.4 billion that they generated in 2005. Now think about that. You know, if inflation's running sort of 2.5-3%, you know, they're doing twice inflation, and so they're generating real revenue like we suspected. They're generating real revenue growth through these fees and surcharges. PwC thinks that half that increase will come from increased room occupancy. So you think about it, if none of the fees changed, 3.5% of this increase is just going to come from more people staying at hotels, more people paying the same charges. But that leaves the other 3.5% increase coming from more fees, an increase in the number of hotels charging fees and surcharges, the increasing range or coverage of these fees, and an increase in the amounts charged. They then list in their press release quite a number of fees they expect travelers to see in 2006, including charges for minibar restocking, as if the prices for what's in the minibar aren't high enough, baggage holding, the use of the in-room safe, and fees for accepting overnight packages. I'll put a link to the press release in the show notes so that you can look at the entire list. One little ray of hope, PwC says that this will be the lowest rate of increase since 2002, which they think indicates that the number of hotels charging fees and surcharges and that the amounts that they're charging is stabilizing. I hope that they're right. I hope it's not instead that the hotels are taking a break, busy looking for more things to charge for. And the last topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, the differences between big and little. At the start of this podcast, we read David Chapman's note about his experience on a very long flight, 10 and a half hours from Christchurch to Singapore, and then 14 and a half hours from Singapore to London. Those are two very long-haul segments. Compare that to many of the flights that most business travelers take. 45-minute flights from Chicago to Detroit, or London to Amsterdam, or Boston to New York. The experiences are very different, especially around on-time arrival. Leo Vigoda, who's done a bit of both, he did Perth, Australia to Amsterdam, and now Amsterdam to London, and he shares a few of his thoughts on this topic.
Hi Mark, it's Leo from Amsterdam. I thought I'd send you some audio feedback on what can go wrong with short commuter flights. The great thing about short commuter flights is that they're fast, and so you can get to your destination really quickly. Unfortunately, the short duration of the flights also means that any delays can really mount up. A 20-minute delay on a medium-haul 6-hour trip is not very noticeable, but 20 minutes is half your fly time on a trip from Amsterdam to London. Of course, all the things that can go wrong with longer flights can also go wrong on a short hop too. But because of the nature of a short flight, it's very difficult for the airline to make up the lost time, especially when the delays are down to the airport. That being said, airlines can do better, and should do better than they sometimes do. Let's start with online check-in. There are two advantages to online check-in. Firstly, you avoid the queue at the check-in desk at the airport, and secondly, you can select your seat. This advantage is lost, however, when the check-in webpage doesn't allow you to select your seat. If you've been assigned a center seat in row 23, that means you'll be going to the check-in desk and asking them for the seat assignment you actually wanted. But that's jumping the gun, because you need to get to the airport, and for me, that means getting a cab. Normally, cab drivers ask you which airline you want and drop you off outside the appropriate entrance. Dropping you off at the wrong building, or even at the arrivals hall, is not really very much appreciated. Now here's where delays really start to come in and add up. Sometimes your flight is delayed because the incoming aircraft was late. Aircraft arrive late for a number of reasons, and they aren't all down to airlines making mistakes. This last weekend, I've been on aircraft delayed by weather, late departure slots, police helicopters blocking the takeoff runway, holding patterns near the destination airport, not getting a gate at the destination airport, and a dispatcher steps and passenger buses not being ready at the destination airport. That's right. On two short 40-minute flights, I saw five different delays, none of which had anything to do with my airline. But don't think this is where it ends. Oh no, your journey hasn't ended until you've got to wherever it is you're actually going. And that's not going to be Heathrow Terminal 4 in most situations. You need to pick up a rental car or use public transport to get you somewhere useful. Delays are still possible here. You can wait for a shuttle bus and then wait for the bus to collect passengers going to the tube station. You can join the queue of 200 people who will want to use the one working ticket machine at Hatton Cross Station, and you can find yourself sitting on a train that rests for 20 minutes between stations. All told, it's completely possible for a short journey between Amsterdam and London, or London and Amsterdam, to take closer to 5 hours than the three it ought to. Proportionally, the increase is huge, even if the delays only add up to 2 hours each way. Most journeys don't involve these delays, but it is possible for them all to happen at once, as I found out to my cost this weekend. In any case, Mark, I hope you have some relatively smooth travel over the next few weeks, and I'll keep on listening to the Travel Commons podcast.
Leo, thanks for taking the time to record that feedback, and nice audio quality too, I might add. Well, I can sympathize with Leo's travails. I used to fly between Chicago and Detroit every week, and I'll tell you, almost every afternoon flight trying to get home to Chicago would end up in the penalty box off to the side of the runway. I'll tell you, they don't call Detroit Hockey Town for nothing. And that's exactly what the pilot would come on and say, "Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have congestion in O'Hare, so we're going to sit in the penalty box for a while." Well, while longer flights could slow down and sort of hit their slot into O'Hare, Detroit was just too close. It seemed like the minute you left the ground at Detroit Metro, you were right under O'Hare flow control. So instead, we'd sit in the penalty box, watching the other planes take off, killing our 20 or 40 or 90 minute penalties, sometimes spending more time in the penalty box than in the air. And it would be those times especially that we'd be jotting notes to ourselves, reminding ourselves to drive next time. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 36. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The music on today's show, Pictures of You by the Scottish band Evangeline, and from the Podshow Music Network, Carolina by Jeremy Hopkins, and Black Cup of Coffee by Ask Me When. Those two, the website, music.podshow.com. If you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, sort of the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. And thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, record audio files, or leave comments on the Travel Commons website. I really appreciate it. Okay, I need to get this edited and posted and up on the website because my wife's birthday is on Saturday, and I have yet to figure out what I am getting her. I am, in the parlance, in deep trouble. So that is my burning issue. So I will put this to bed, and then I will run out to the shopping center. So take care, and until we talk again, safe travels. Bye now.